Hello and welcome to the Majlis Podcast, Radio Free Europe, the Liberties Current Affairs Talk Show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis and Radio Free Europe, the Liberties Media Manager here in Washington, D.C. The world is on the brink of food shortage, a headline from CNN International. The looming catastrophe of the global food shortage, writes The Week. These are some of the common headlines popping up on the internet lately, and this is in part another consequences of Russia's war in Ukraine. Russia is one of the world's largest wheat producers, and Ukraine is not very far behind it. Now, these two countries are at war, sending shockwaves around the world regarding the already scarce and fragile food security. This concern couldn't be more pressing in Central Asia, where some countries depending on Russian wheat for up to 90%, and Russia banned exports beginning of this March. On top of that, the region relies on Kazakhstan to fill any deficit. But Moscow's decision also led Kazakhstan, the largest buyer of Russian wheat in the region, to lose access to Russian wheat, thus banning its wheat export effective today, April 15. This is particularly catastrophic news for the impoverished country of Tajikistan, which imports up to 90% of its wheat from Kazakhstan. Equally bad news for Kyrgyzstan, as half of its wheat comes from Kazakhstan, and as well as for Uzbekistan, the largest Kazakh wheat importer. All this comes at a time when prices for wheat and other food products have risen to record highs throughout the region, and the region's buying power has seriously diminished due to the loss of income from the labor migrants, another victim of the war. Now, what next for the region? How people are coping with it? How is the situation today and what is expected tomorrow? What are the authorities doing about it and what are their options? On the broader picture, what will be the implications of this in months ahead? To discuss all these, I'm joined by Dr. Khalida Ajigulova, researcher in human rights, gender equality, forced and labor migration in Central Asia, joining us from Kazakhstan. Rizkelde Sadka, independent journalist and environmental researcher, joining us from Kyrgyzstan. Bruce Panier, Central Asia analyst, joining us from Prague, Czech Republic. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us on this important conversation. So let's start from the big picture development. Russia, which is the world's largest wheat exporter producer, banning grain exports to its fellow members of the Moscow-led Eurasia Economic Union that includes Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Belarus, and Armenia in March. So how big of a deal is this? Let's start with you, Rizkelde, maybe.
It is a big deal, and it's not only related to the restrictions. This is also has to do with prices, because as we know, last year, when the region was dealing with the quarantine and coronavirus, it was also the drought has a big impact on production and farming in the region. So just like, for instance, drought had a negative impact on Kyrgyzstan crop production by 41%, which is huge. And that forced Kyrgyzstan to increase its imports from Russia. So on top of all this, this year, now, since Russia introduced this restriction on exports, we have a situation where the prices are going up literally on a monthly basis. It was very observable in March, last month, when the prices started coming out, you know, coming up, jumping up literally on a weekly basis. And then I actually saw this on the local market when I went there to buy groceries. I saw a line of retirees, mostly retirees, lining up for buying flour and anything. Sugar went up dramatically. There was a time when the sugar went up, I believe, more than twice the price of than it was previously in February, before the war started. Yeah, and a similar situation is concerns are in Uzbekistan, as you said, Tajikistan and Kazakhstan also introduced its own ban on exports, even though they have more than a six million tons of crops in reserves, and they seem to have enough, but they don't want to have any effect on the domestic market. So since Russia introduced this ban, most of the Kazakh businesses, especially in that business, they were buying from Russia as well. Russia stopped it till August, and the it is expected that Kazakhstan this month will introduce a ban till June. which is about 2 months.
I guess.
So I think it's quite a development. It's a huge development for this region.
I guess the ban, Kazakhstan's ban, is effective from today, April 15, is what I heard. Khalida, perhaps you know more than us. I mean, again, Kazakhstan introducing this, let's hope, temporary restrictions of exporting wheat to neighboring countries, neighboring Central Asia. I mean, I was giving example of Tajikistan, 94% of dependency in terms of wheat import to Kazakhstan. I mean, we know wheat is crucial in Central Asian kitchen. So I don't know how's the situation on the ground in Tajikistan, as we could not have anyone from there to join us today. But it's a huge, but again, in part why Kazakhstan is doing that is because Kazakhstan was importing wheat from Russia, and Russia banned wheat to Kazakhstan and rest of the neighboring countries. So tell us, from Kazakhstan's perspective, how this development has affected Kazakhstan as a wheat exporter.
As far as I know, Kazakhstani flour producers, many of them, they prefer to buy wheat from Russia. Even though we do grow our own, you know, wheat, and we also export it, but the wheat in Russia was cheaper than in Kazakhstan. Yeah. So basically now, because Russia banned the export of wheat from the country, it means that the Kazakhstani producers of flour, they basically have to buy from within the market, you know, and so the prices, and the price is indeed higher than in Russia. Mm. And so this may be one of the reasons in the first place, you know, why we see the increase, the rise in the prices for flour right now, but also maybe because, again, this is like a precautionary measure, you know, because right now nothing is really clear. The future is really not clear for anyone, and perhaps this is just another precautionary measure by the government to prevent any real shortage on the market. And again, they are basically employing this measure just to establish this food security for the country, you know, to ensure this food security for its own people. But of course, it is very important to take into account that this ban for export of wheat from Kazakhstan may indeed negatively affect our neighbors in the region, the Central Asian region. So at the moment, I believe it is an issue that should be discussed at the political level among the presidents of all affected countries in the region.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we will get to that in terms of what they are doing about this crisis. Before that, Bruce, earlier I was talking about the Tajikistan, for instance, you know, the huge dependency that it has in terms of grain imports from countries like Kazakhstan. And in the case of Kyrgyzstan, bulk of their grain also comes from Russia, which is banned now. And then Uzbekistan, the same, importing wheat from Kazakhstan as well as from Russia. In, you know, they are now deprived of both sources. So tell us how the crisis is affecting Tajikistan, perhaps Uzbekistan, and maybe Turkmenistan in this case. I mean, in Turkmenistan's case, that's a very interesting country. I mean, it sounds to me, you know, the food shortage is never-ending story there. Now, on the top of all this, we have this new development, new situation. So tell us from the local perspective of those three countries, how they are affected so far from this development.
So, I mean, prices are going up just like we've heard, you know, same in Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan. Obviously, prices are going up, and some, you know, steeply for all kinds of basic goods. If we're just talking about wheat, though, flour, then yeah sure. I mean, for one thing, you know, Kazakh flour was like one of the most desirable types of flour you could get in Turkmenistan for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what people wanted, was Kazakh flour and not their own, you know, for obvious reasons. Turkmenistan not being exactly a big wheat producer.
Quality is also, I mean, my knowledge comes from my previous background as the director of the Turkmen service. So the flour produced in Turkmenistan, that it does not compare to what they could get from the Kazakhstan. So yeah, there's also a quality issue there.
Oh, yeah. Well, without a doubt. I mean, Kazakhstan has enough money to use decent fertilizer, and they probably have much cleaner water that goes into the fields, you know, than in Turkmenistan. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that make Kazakh flour or wheat a lot better than Turkmen product. You know, Tajikistan, of course, they've had the same problem, and the prices have gone up again. The thing that I thought was, you know, I hate to use the word amusing because it's a serious situation, but President Rahmon again said, he called on all citizens to stock up food supplies for 2 years. And I'm like, you know, he said that so many times in the last 15 years that it really lost its meaning. And this is a serious situation now. But you know, I don't know what the people even make of that, because they've, like I said, they've heard it. 10 times or more in the last 15 years, where he's been saying stock up for 2 years, you know, like there's going to be an apocalypse or something practically. Uzbekistan, yeah, I mean, it's going to hit Uzbekistan really hard. I would say the difference between Uzbekistan and Tajikistan and Turkmenistan is that Uzbekistan produces, has a much bigger agricultural sector.
But it has lots of mouth to feed, right?
Pardon me?
But Uzbekistan also has lots of mouths to feed.
Yeah, well, they do. But like I said, that's, you know, they won't be able to, they couldn't be self-sufficient for wheat or flour, but they grow a lot of other things. So the fact that you don't have access, the same kind of access to bread, at least chances are that you'll have good access to fruits and vegetables, for instance, nuts, you know, things like that. So whereas Tajikistan and Turkmenistan, that's not going to be, that's not the case, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, they grow some of those things, but not anywhere near enough to feed their populations.
Yeah, a couple of questions there, maybe Rizkel, or anyone who wants to jump in here. But yeah, we have been saying that the situation is very, very serious. I mean, how to measure the seriousness, Rizkel, when what you have in mind when you say this is very serious?
Well, I think, you know, we have to look at the official statements or data and the realistic data that is coming out of on the ground. It's like, for instance, Uzbek Service reported recently that the Uzbek government stated that the food items went up by 2.5%. But the economists in Uzbekistan, they're saying that these numbers are not realistic. So the real number is anywhere between 20 to 30%. That's probably more realistic. And given that, we can probably have an idea how bad it is in certain countries. And speaking of certain countries, in Kyrgyzstan, we know that prices on food items, and like, for instance, to be specific, oil, vegetable oil that is typically imported from Kazakhstan, doubled last year during the pandemic. But this year, the price is also going up now. And so it's all connected to the situation in Kazakhstan as well, and Russia, of course. And to be fair, I have to say that this situation is going to hit vulnerable population really hard. And I think we could say that this would probably hit the whole region, because the poverty in this region is high, especially in Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan. The numbers are really high. So, and given that for the last 2 years, the countries couldn't catch a break on certain items like food items. So given what's happening this year, I think it's safe to say that it will be a difficult year for many in this region.
Mm. I mean, Kazakhstan, yes, we understand that they already have some safety net. And so in order to save that, they just banned wheat export, at least. In countries like Tajikistan, what is the level of their safety net? I mean, how long they can survive?
In Kazakhstan, our government tries to assure the population that we have sufficient supplies and stocks, for example, for dairy and for meat. They do explain that we may have some shortages of sugar, for example, because our internal market, our local market, can provide only for some 50%, around 50% of all needs of the population in sugar. But with regards to other food items, yes, the authorities, they claim that there is no problem. So, but again, you know, we have this general concern that, I would say, the level of trust of the population to the government is generally low. And of course, unfortunately, over the last maybe...
Khalida, do you hear me? Do you guys hear Khalida?
No, I don't. It's kind of eerie that you
trust
in the government was low, and then we lost the connection.
You know, as Khalida was talking about, and also hopefully she will join us back. So what we're talking about, so we were talking about the wheat generally, just because Russia and Ukraine, two main wheat exporters, producers, are at war, and subsequently Kazakhstan banning or imposing restrictions on wheat exports, another major wheat exporter. So obviously wheat being in the headlines, we were focused on wheat, but obviously the implications of the situation goes far beyond that. So I also heard from all of you that it is very, very serious. Now,
Can I throw something in real quick,
just to
follow up on Halida's, what she was talking about too, is that, you know, we got to remember when Kazakhstan, and of course, like we've been saying, they're really kind of the supplier, certainly for wheat and flour to Central Asia, but they're coming off the unrest in January too, and you got to take that in consideration, that they have to make sure that the people in the country get enough food and that there's no problem, because they already had a huge problem at the start of the year. And the last thing in the world they want is that shortages of flour and wheat cause more social unrest, like what we saw in January. So it's something else they have to think about when they're planning in Kazakhstan about what they can export and what they need to keep.
Khalida, are you back?
Yes, sorry. Again, we have this internet failure. Unfortunately, yes. And, another thing that I wanted to add is that generally in the public, we have discussions that we may expect around 3 to 4 million of Russian citizens coming to Kazakhstan, maybe even this year, again, depending on the outcomes of the war in Ukraine. Maybe they would come as refugees, or maybe they would come just as citizens of this Eurasian Economic Union. But again, the authorities, apparently, they believe that this scenario is feasible. And that's why, again, now taking these precautionary measures, to restrict the export of the basic food items from the country in case these 3 or 4 million of Russian citizens would enter the country.
Wow. So we discussed about kind of big picture thing here, and also the way in which it's affecting markets and the cost of food in general, and how people are coping with it. And also another big picture kind of question is how authorities are responding to this situation in the region. What are their options, and what are the possible implications that one expect coming out of this situation? So let's continue the podcast talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast. I'm joined by Dr. Khalida Ajigulova, researcher in human rights, gender equality, forced and labor migration in Central Asia, Rizkel Desatki, an independent journalist and environmental researcher, Bruce Panier, Central Asia analyst. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast and Radio Free Liberty Liberties media manager here in Washington, D.C. And we are discussing the pending food shortage, perhaps crisis in Central Asia. So we said it's a serious crisis, or it is about to turn into a very serious one. So how people are coping with this, Bruce, you follow those developments through the local sources. We spoke about Tajikistan, for example. We spoke about Turkmenistan, and these two countries that I think would be very vulnerable in the current situation. How people are coping with this crisis as it is, it looks like to me more yet to come, but, as we speak.
Well, generally across Central Asia, the initial reaction, as it always is when there's something big like this happens, is to hoard as much food as you can. So, and I've seen photos of empty shelves in stores from all around different parts of Central Asia. But it's not so much that they're out of all those products because they can replenish it, but just because people are panicking that, they know this is coming. So, and you've seen the reports where people are buying five times as much sugar as they used to, also because they expect the price is going to go up, as we've heard, and it probably will. So that's one thing. If you went into a store, depending on where you are in some country, you might actually find that they don't have a lot of the basic goods that you're used to seeing in that. But that's more because, at the moment anyway, that's more because so many people have gone down and bought everything they could, hedge against the future and things being bad. Some stuff you can stock up and some you just can't. Dairy products, meat, stuff like that just doesn't last very long, certainly not without refrigeration. It's just going to be tough.
On that note, earlier, Satkel, you were talking about mostly retirees, though, but people are lining up in front of the stores. Those kind of examples, how much of a common thing that has become?
Well, it was quite visible in March, last month, right around mid-March, something like that. And people were literally, just like Bruce just said, they were panicking. And they were buying sugar, and grocery store owners, they were forced to ration sugar sales. So they weren't selling more than 1 kilo or 2 kilos per hand. And that was last month. But this month, we're not seeing anything like that anymore. The prices went down a little bit, but they're still high. It doesn't mean that the prices are back to normal again, because once the price goes up, as we know, these wholesalers and grocery store owners, they typically try to keep it up there.
Are there any stuff, any staple that are out of the market as we speak?
No, not really. I think many of these food items are fully stocked now, and we're not seeing any shortages anymore. Well, the only concern is the price. because for retirees, for instance, you know, some people, categories, they get somewhere around $50 or $60 a month. That's their pension. And they cannot afford to buy, say, a flour, which was, say, just for instance, say $5 a kilo. I'm not saying that's the real price. But if they can, they will buy it when they have an opportunity, and they do not want to wait till later when the price will go up significantly. So that's the main, I think, major factor that the people were panicking. And I think the government couldn't help because they typically say that they have stocks, everything is fine, but somehow it doesn't work.
You know, earlier, RFRL's Turkmen Service reporting about the lines, similar lines, perhaps longer, because the reporting was like, you know, people just start lining up early in the evening to be among the first when shop opens next day. And this is, I guess, the story about the lines in front of the subsidized food stores in Turkmenistan. I don't know how is the kind of environment other than subsidized stores in the country, but food shortages has always been an issue in the country. But one is, yes, food shortages. The other thing is price hikes. And, you know, as the war continues, unfortunately, we expect this to be even worse going forward. And also another consequences of the war is, like, people, lots of people have lost their income. Like, I'm particularly looking into the migrant community in Russia, that they are affected because of the war in Ukraine. I mean, one thing is that, yes, food prices and shortage of the food. The other thing is the purchasing power, Bruce, that has also diminished. What kind of complication is this adding into the already a fragile situation?
Well, I mean, it's amazing how many problems are all coming together at the same time. That, you know, that's what's probably going to be one of the hardest issues to deal with for all the governments of the region. Certainly the governments of the region that have a lot of migrant laborers, is what are you going to do with all these people that are coming back to no jobs and added strain on the food supply by being there, and at the same time being unable to probably afford the prices of the food as it is now because everything's going up due to shortages. Like I said, that's another factor that the governments, I don't know how they're going to deal with that exactly. You know, we know that in Uzbekistan, at least 200,000 people have shown up since February and come back to home. And I imagine it's in the tens of thousands in Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan also. And what do you do with them? I don't know. That's a good question. It's going to put a strain on a lot of things. Like I said, not just the employment industry and the jobs industry, but the food supply in the countries.
Khalida, you follow this thing as part of your profession. You know, the impact of all this to migrant workers and kind of trickling effect of that into all the other problems that we are talking about in terms of the price hikes, in terms of the food shortages and these restrictive measures. I mean, what kind of implication we should expect to see in days and months ahead of these all problems coming together?
Yes, indeed, it's a very serious question because, for example, already in Kazakhstan, we have observed the devaluation of local currency up to 25%. And actually, that was also one of the reasons why the prices for food and other items, they just skyrocketed. But now, for example, the government introduced some financial measures and the currency, the local currency, it got stronger. So, but nonetheless, you know, the prices remained almost at the same high level. So I think the problem right now is that, again, the people, the population at large, they're not certain about their future. They don't know what would happen next. Again, they don't really trust much to the government. And already we see that people starting, you know, to save and economize, and maybe they're spending less on maybe unnecessary items, and of course spending more on food. You know, actually this has always been a problem in Kazakhstan, that the majority of the population, they spend more than 50% of their salaries for grocery. So even in the past it was already a concern. So now, of course, you know, the situation is deteriorating, and the government, again, they understand that if they do not manage, you know, to cope with this problem, there may be at risk and they may see more protests of people in the country, what they really want to avoid.
Kyrgyzstan is an active country at risk. Are you seeing any kind of consequences, like immediate consequences of all this situation politically, perhaps law and order? What are the areas you are looking at?
Well, so far, we're not seeing anything significant that would indicate that there's a problem or crisis on the horizon regarding social issues, and especially the food security. But I think the major question here is whether, just like Bruce said before, that the governments, what will they do, given that there's uncertainty coming out of Russia and Ukraine? What's going to happen if they have these reserves, food reserves primarily? If they do have them, will they be able to sustain, and will they have new sources? Probably they could access new markets and stock up on certain items, at least basic ones. So far, we're not seeing anything like that in Kyrgyzstan, I could say 100%. We're not seeing anything like that. They are trying to reassure the public that there is no food crisis at the moment. And the second thing is that we know that in Uzbekistan last month, the president, you directed the local governors and local administrations to keep researching the prices, food prices on the local markets. And if there are any instabilities, so he ordered to interfere and make sure that the prices are stable. So if situation is like that in Uzbekistan, or at least what we're seeing in the news, in Kyrgyzstan it's a little different, because here the market at force is all the time, and once the price goes up, as we know, it stays there for quite a long time. And the food prices are up, and compared to last year, they are up more than 2021. And so far, I can't say that there's anything coming down the pipe regarding social conflicts or issue or tensions due to food prices. But you never know. Kyrgyzstan is the kind of country that could blow up at any certain moment. And well, we have seen that 2 years ago. So far, no, there's no indications that something may happen here.
The same question to you, Bruce, and also an additional question there is, I mean, yes, governments needs to step up their game to be able to handle the situation, but do you see that they are, and also what are their options?
Well, I mean, stepping up, you know, Riscaldi mentioned that all the governments across Central Asia are saying that they have people out watching the prices, you know, so that they don't...
But that's not a solution, right?
Well, I mean, at least it does keep price gouging down a little bit, you know, and all of them are promising that they have stockpiled a certain amount of food. I think Kazakhstan's the only one that's gone so far as to say they have enough, that there shouldn't be any worry about feeding the people. The other ones haven't gone quite that far. I don't think there is a good answer to this question, because unfortunately, the kind of things that they're short of, they can't really get from too many places that are close by. You know, they grow wheat in Europe, but that's a long ways away. I mean, Russia and Kazakhstan are right there. You can't get wheat from any, you know, China doesn't have wheat to export. Pakistan doesn't have wheat to export. Afghanistan, Iran, they don't have it either. So it's really tough. It'd have to come from a lot further away, and then it would be really expensive for them to get it. And that's tough. You know, I think one of the big problems for the Central Asians are the governments is, yeah, they got to provide for that. But the problems that have led them to this stage is there's no sign that it'll go away. And since we're running short, I mean, we talked before the show that they had a drought last year, right? Yeah, so this already complicated the situation, and prices were already higher because they, you know, those shortfalls, Riscaldi mentioned 41% drop in crops last year in Kyrgyzstan. Well, all of them had that problem, right? So prices were already up. If the drought continues this year, what happens then? Now they're suffering because of Russia's war in Ukraine and the sanctions that are on, but there's no sign that that's coming to an end.
What if
it goes on for 2 or 3 years. So, I mean, this is just entering what could be a sustained, horrible period, you know, of trying to secure basic goods in Central Asia when your immediate supply chain, your close-by suppliers can't supply you anymore with what you need, with all of what you need, or maybe even a fraction of what you need.
Wow. And it's also, again, it brings up lots of other questions that what they could have done to be prepared for a situation like this in the past. But again, that's going to expand our conversation here. So just maybe final question before we end the conversation today here. So this whole crisis situation that kind of coming on the top of each other at the same time, hitting the region, in this case, hitting lots of other regions as well, you know, around the world. But since we are talking about Central Asia, so what are the areas that, Khalida, perhaps you will be looking at going forward in terms of where we are headed after this? As Bruce said, it doesn't look like that, you know, Ukraine-Russia war is going to end anytime soon. So we will continue to have this problem in terms of the restrictions and food shortages in some ways or the other. So where your eyes will be going forward in terms of where we are headed from here?
Well, you know, perhaps what we may look at is perhaps a potential regional food security arrangement for Central Asia. I think that perhaps in the future, indeed, all the states of Central Asia, they should discuss and see how they could, you know, ensure and provide for this regional food security. Maybe they could also involve Turkey, for example, as part of another, you know, this Turkic state union or something like that. But I believe that it is indeed important for our governments, for the political leadership of our states in Central Asia to discuss this issue and make sure, you know, that none of the citizens of our region would be affected because of food shortage.
Okay, and maybe the same question from both of you, Riscaldi and Bruce, and with that we are going to conclude the conversation. So, yeah, kind of future forecast, where your eyes will be in terms of where we are headed from here.
I think the governments in this region should be focusing more on the domestic agriculture, subsidizing. In Kazakhstan, we know that the government is focusing more heavily on farmers lately. We will see what happens with that. But in the country like Kyrgyzstan, I think they should have done that a long time ago.
Yeah.
Instead of importing goods and crops and food items from Kazakhstan, and of course they will in the future, but I think they could do more in this country. As far as Uzbekistan, I think, you know, they could do more too, but it all depends on what are the policies the Uzbek president will be laying out. Tajikistan is difficult to say. As you said, we don't have much information from Tajikistan. But another thing I want to touch upon is that there's an increasing impact of temperatures in this region. I think we're seeing this already. And last year we saw that, and this year so far the spring temperatures are up significantly. Mm. We don't know how summer temperatures will have an impact on agriculture, because we saw that last year water shortages had an impact on farmers in Kyrgyzstan. Mm. Maybe we'll have the same development this year again. But what I'm trying to say is that I think the governments in this region should focus on sustainability in agriculture, which means water cooperation, transboundary water distribution, and most of all, they should settle their disputes, whether it's a border or economic disputes. Like, for instance, Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan on the border, they are constantly having these problems.
Yeah.
Another problem is Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan.
Yes.
We know what happened there. And Uzbekistan and Kyrgyzstan also seemingly have some border issues as well, which is about a week ago there was a shooting on the border and two people were dead as a result on the Uzbek side.
Yeah.
So I think there's plenty of issues, but it all depends on how these governments in Central Asia will come together. And so far we're not seeing any sign of progress, to be honest.
Let's hope that if this crisis kind of, you know, convinces them to come together, because it seems to be there's no other solution. Bruce, do you see any solution in that context where you will be looking at as to where you're headed?
First, I really like Halida's idea. I mean, regional food security cooperation would be a great thing. You know, but just to follow up on what Riscaldi was talking about too, I mean, that's what I was thinking, is that they really have to pay a lot more attention to domestic agriculture in all these areas. And, you know, the weird thing is that there's a lot of untended land out there. We've heard of, you know, the Kazakhstan has had the big problem with land privatization and everything like that. And that's because there's a lot of land there that you could farm or practice some kind of agriculture, animal husbandry or something on, but there's nobody there to do it. Tajikistan has the same problem. And even Kyrgyzstan and Uzbekistan to a large extent. That's why they got people leave. A lot of people that leave to be migrant laborers in Russia are from rural areas, right? So Tajikistan certainly has this case where there's untended farms because the people just packed up and left and decided they'd make more money in Russia than sitting there and working the farm in Tajikistan. Bring back that land. You've got people coming back, migrant laborers and stuff. The government needs to inject a huge amount of money, these governments, into domestic agriculture, but farming, and see if they can convince people it's profitable to go back to the farm since they can't go to Russia anyway, and grow more food for the local population. That would be one possibility anyway.
And also, you know, just to point out, you know, Turkmenistan has kind of skips over radar in these kind of conversation, but in Turkmenistan case, it looks like even worse. Like, you know, there you have land owned by the authorities. And again, authorities are the one who provides equipment equipment. Authorities are the one who provides fertilizers, seeds, everything kind of, you know, in hands of the authorities. And they are still even not closer to its neighbors in terms of reforming the agriculture sector there. And it obviously it's adding more complications into the problem that they are currently facing. Okay, let's see what we might be talking about in the upcoming weeks as Russia's war in Ukraine enters to, I guess, sixth week or seventh week now. So thank you very much, Dr. Khalida Ajigulova, researcher in human rights, gender equality, forced and labor migration in Central Asia, who is joining us from Kazakhstan today. And also big thanks to Rizkel Dishatki, the independent journalist and environmental researcher, who is joining us from Kyrgyzstan, and Bruce Panier, Central Asia analyst, who is joining us from Prague, Czech Republic today. Thank you very much, colleagues. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe Liberties Media Manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. Until next week, bye-bye.